Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studios, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. We're here till 5 a.m. It's Tuesday. That means two for Tuesday, man, here. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200 for talk, text, and two for Tuesday requests. All right. Jim Ryan joins us periodically. He writes about music for Forbes, the Daily Herald, and the Chicago at Night blog on Chicago Now. You can follow him on Twitter at Radio Jim Ryan, and he joins us right now, live in studio. Jim, how are you?
I'm doing all right. How about you?
All right. Good to see you, man.
Good to see you. Thank you for having me.
Busy?
As always.
Since last I saw you was pre-Lollapalooza.
Right.
We did a Lollapalooza rundown on the artists that would be playing each day and who you were planning on seeing.
Right.
And all that stuff. And since Lollapalooza has happened. And tell me a little bit about the Lollapalooza experience in the weekend.
You know, I will tell you that this is the first year, and it pains me to say this, that I felt kind of old at Lollapalooza.
Ah, yes. It was inevitable. It was inevitable.
That is not a festival that is geared anymore for anyone, I think, in their late 30s.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with that.
But such is life.
So let's talk about some of the highlights of Lollapalooza 2018. What were some shows that you liked very much?
You know, starting on Thursday, the headliner was Arctic Monkeys,
mm-hmm.
and they were all right. But earlier in the day, there were a couple that really stood out. For instance, Tyler Childers,
okay,
who's another kind of in this vein. Alongside guys like Sturgill Simpson and Chris Stapleton, where he's a country musician, but very much out of the old school country tradition, not contemporary.
Well, both those other guys that you mentioned, I like very much.
Me too. Yeah. So you would like Tyler Childers from Kentucky, a 5-piece band with slide guitar and pedal steel and fiddle and all of that
cool
stuff. Songs about moonshine, songs about drugs, songs is exactly what you would expect
right
from a guy out of that tradition. And I guess he kind of started to blow up out of South by Southwest.
Okay.
And people were shocked that he was on at like 1 p.m. on a Thursday. But he was outstanding.
Was there a crowd?
So there was a little bit of a crowd. I've never seen Lollapalooza as empty as it was on Thursday and Sunday this year.
Oh,
At least early in the day. It did fill in by about 4 or 5 o'clock on both days, but they had talked about this year how ticket sales were a little bit slow, and I think that was kind of an understatement going into the weekend.
Oh, wow.
There were a lot of tickets left for Thursday and Sunday.
Wow.
At least it looked that way early.
Okay. All right. So that was a good set?
Yeah, Tyler Childers. He was fantastic.
Tyler Childers. Okay, I'm going to look into that.
And he was followed up by a band that I guess has been around for a while, but they weren't on my radar, a Canadian indie pop group called Stars, a male and female lead vocalists harmonizing. They kind of reminded me at times of New Order. They would kind of bounce back and forth from guitar-driven stuff to more electronic-driven stuff.
Oh, really?
They were fantastic. Yeah, that was another one. I was on like 2 p.m.
And that was, they were called Stars?
They were called Stars,
and they're out of Canada.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm wearing the finest Canadian band t-shirt of all time here.
Yes, you are.
Saga,
well,
of course.
That's outstanding.
Okay, what else? That was Thursday.
That was Thursday.
Then, who were the? You said Arctic Monkeys, right?
Arctic
were the
Monkeys
headliners?
Was the big headliner on Thursday. Yeah, throughout the day, then Franz Ferdinand was there Thursday, and a UK punk group called the Wombats
mm-hmm.
were also very good a little bit earlier in the day. So that was Thursday. And then Friday was the biggest day of the weekend because Bruno Mars was headlining Friday
right.
night.
Now, okay, you got, what time did you get? I just want to hear your day. What time did you get there on Thursday?
On
so 1 o'clock you saw...
Yeah, Thursday was the earliest. I get there later and later throughout the weekend because the after shows start, and then
I'm
getting up to file my
right.
Coverage in the morning.
Right.
So Thursday is the one day when I can actually get there early and
right.
you know, not have to pay for it. But yeah, by Friday, I think I got in there maybe at like 3 or 4 o'clock. I try to get there pretty early because that is one of my favorite things about Lollapalooza is that there are these bands you've never heard of early in the day, and you can usually discover some cool stuff. The one that really stands out to me over the last few years in 2014, I remember seeing Courtney Barnett
man, she's great.
2 in the afternoon in a rainstorm and just being like, this is, I don't know what this is, but it's unbelievable.
She's playing in October. She's coming to town in October.
The Riv, yeah.
Yeah.
But
she's great. She's the deal, man.
Love her.
She's the real deal. yeah. So did you discover anything on Friday?
Friday, I think my favorite thing Friday, at least an artist who I wasn't super familiar with going in, was Tyler the Creator. So he comes out of the rap collective Odd Future.
Mm-hmm.
But he was terrific. Super, super, super energetic.
Yeah. He's Tyler, the Creator. I'm familiar with his stuff, and he's got an alter ego, too, where he puts on like a pair of glasses and a wacky nose. It's not like Digital Underground. It's not like that. It's not a total ripoff of Digital Underground.
Okay.
But he puts on wacky glasses and calls everybody an idiot. And I can't remember the character's name, but it's a he's got an alter ego.
That's interesting.
It is. Yeah, it is. He's a pretty funny guy, and I think he's pretty talented at that.
He had one of the more interesting stage presentations of the weekend too. He had a two-tiered stage with a video screen in between the two and a giant video screen behind everything, and he would perform from atop that second tier. He would perform from the stage itself. He was all over the place.
Yeah.
He was just terrific.
Yeah. Okay. Cool.
He was good, and then Greta Van Fleet was Friday.
Hmm.
That was one of the bigger ones Friday, and
that's everybody saying is the new Zeppelin.
That's what everybody's saying. Yeah, that's they're going to save rock and roll, Nick.
Yeah,
that's the word.
That happens every couple of years. There's always a band that's going to save rock and roll.
The Strokes stick out is one I remember hearing that about.
Right. How's that going?
We're still waiting on that.
Yeah.
But Greta Van Fleet, I just talked about this in the hallway of Mike Heineman on my way in. They seemed to kind of have the deer in the headlights thing going on a little bit at Lollapalooza itself. Their after show at the Vic, however, was phenomenal.
Oh, it was.
That was scorching and great and everything you had hoped it would be. But on stage at Lollapalooza, and it was really interesting, too, because, I mean, they were crammed off on one of the smaller side stages, so you had this immense overflow crowd. They were on early, too. They were on at like 5:30, opposite Post Malone.
Mm-hmm.
But you had an immense crowd down there for it, and it was interesting. It wasn't bad by any means, but they were significantly better at the Vic.
Okay. All right.
So it's just, they're fascinating to me because I think they literally have their debut full-length album coming out, I think, soon. But at this point, I think there's 13, I think, recorded songs, maybe, to their entire history.
The buzz surrounding this band is ridiculous.
It is. It's insane.
It is. It's crazy.
So it'll be interesting to watch how, especially that front man, kind of grows into the role, because right now, there's not a lot in terms of dynamic front man to him. But, I mean, he's got the pipes, that's
And everybody
for sure.
says that they're like the second coming of Zeppelin. I say that they're the second coming of Black Crowes, because Black Crowes was the second coming of Zeppelin, and I think these guys are more of a carbon copy of the Black Crowes. I'm not going to put them on the same level as Zeppelin.
Do you like the Black Crowes, by the way?
I do.
Okay, me too.
Yeah.
I love Rich Robinson.
I love them all. The tour with Jimmy Page, speaking of Zeppelin,
right,
was great. And the Brotherly Love tour when they toured with Oasis.
I love that. Did you see that in Tinley
No,
Park?
I did not.
Oasis blew them off the stage.
Are you serious?
Night. Oh my God, it was hilarious.
Well, that doesn't surprise me. I love Oasis.
Yeah, they were
great. But yeah, so all right, so hold on. Let's recap Lollapalooza, but we have to hit the news, okay? Jim Ryan is with us, and we're talking music. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. And he was at Lollapalooza, and we have great news about the band The Outfield for all you people who are waiting with bated breath. So that's coming up right after we break for the news. Welcome back, everybody. How are you? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. It is Tuesday. That means it's 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, man, 2 for Tuesday. Get your requests in now. 312-981-7200. One artist, two songs. We'll play them later. We're going to be talking about power ballads in a little bit. Some of the most ridiculous 80s power ballads of all time. And then we're going to talk about words that are inherently happy. So that's all coming up. Jim Ryan is with us. Jim, you were laughing about the term power ballads.
I feel like I know what inspired that. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Yeah. Well, actually, what inspired it, we're going to get to that because that's a power ballad as well.
Yes.
But it's I have this. Do you have Access TV?
AXS? Yeah. Is that Mark Cuban's channel?
Is it? I don't know.
I think maybe.
I think it might be, but it's almost all music. It's concerts and stuff.
Right.
And yeah. So they have this show on there called Top 10 Revealed, and I was stumbling upon it, and I found it, and it's just this show where they have a top 10 list with a different topic every show.
Okay.
So it's pretty simple setup, and as they've got a woman hosting it, and then they have talking heads, you know,
sure.
Steve Adler was one of the talking heads.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Can he put together a coherent?
He's much better than he was when he was on Celebrity Rehab.
That's what I'm remembering.
But no, he's... I think he's doing okay now.
That's good.
And then other people, you know, are interviewed, talking heads, and the one that I caught was the top 10 greatest 80s power ballads.
Wow. Okay.
And it was hilarious. It was ridiculous. And that's what we're going to talk about power ballads in a little bit. So, but anyway, so you were at Lollapalooza.
I was.
As we were mentioning.
Yes.
And you were about, you were on Friday.
Yeah, we were on Friday. So, yeah. I mean, that was as there was a lot of room on Thursday. Let's put it that way. Friday, you couldn't move by the time the headliners came out because it, at least if you were watching Bruno Mars, there was a lot of room to watch the National on the other end of the park at the same time.
Yeah.
I've never seen a crowd quite like the one that was assembled for Bruno Mars. And I'm thinking of some of the bigger crowds I've seen in the last few years. Red Hot Chili Peppers, inexplicably, 2 years ago was an immense crowd.
Mm-hmm.
Chance the Rapper, obviously, last year was an immense crowd.
Yeah, yeah.
The Killers, Paul McCartney, that kind of stuff. That Bruno Mars crowd was unbelievable.
It was that big, huh?
I could not work my way down the steps into the softball pit on the south end of Grand Park, which is where Bruno Mars was performing on the south
main
stage.
That sounds incredibly unpleasant.
Yeah, it was insane. It was... I watched about five songs. They were shooting off some fireworks. I could barely hear it from how far back I was, and decided I would go check out the National, which had no problem at all getting close to that.
Yeah. And then, now, was there rain over the week? Over
there was
weekend?
No rain. That was might have been the biggest story.
Because I was at, because every year, and it's not every year, but...
It seems like it.
I was at Flashback.
Oh, sure.
Horror convention. And I'm inside a hotel for 4 days.
Right.
I mean, I check in on Thursday and I check out on Sunday late afternoon, except for when we have a couple of outdoor screenings. There's a big courtyard next to the hotel. They set up a giant inflatable screen.
Okay.
And then they show a couple of movies. And so we were concerned about the rain.
Right.
Because we showed Child's Play on Friday night and then Fright Night on Saturday night, complete with cast reunions, and the directors were there, and the director was there, and all that stuff. And so the weather was not an issue, and we were really happy about that, because there was rain in the forecast, and it was Lollapalooza weekend, which means it's guaranteed to rain.
Because I remember the first couple of years I went, it would be like 100 with no rain, without fail, and then at least 3 or 4 years in a row now, it's been, you know, raining in 70 every day, so this was a drastic departure from what we've become accustomed to.
Yeah, it was warm. I know. It was very warm on Saturday. I know that much.
Yes, it was.
We were outside for the Fright Night screening on Saturday, and it was muggy. It was really muggy out. And that was it. The screening started like 8:45. Well, it started later because I don't want to get into it, but the screen deflated.
It's not good.
No, it's not.
That sounds like a problem.
But you know what? You know who made it not a problem?
Who's that?
Amanda Bierce, who,
okay.
You know her from, from Marcy from Married with Children.
Sure.
She is also in Fright Night. She's the female lead in Fright Night.
Okay.
So she... When the screen collapsed, we've got like a crowd outside waiting to watch the movie.
Right.
She ran in front of the crowd and started doing like a half an hour, like bits, while they inflated it. Nobody asked her to. Nobody, you know, she just ran up there. And then finally, when she was like answering questions and entertaining the audience, I finally ran out and grabbed her a mic and gave it to her. And then I took a mic and started getting questions from the audience. And we worked the crowd. And then the movie started. It deflated again. And she went back out again. She did about 45 minutes in front of this crowd, keeping them entertained so no one would leave while they were trying to fix the screen.
Crisis averted.
And it was one of the coolest things ever because, you know, I talked to her the next day and I'm like, you know, you didn't have to do that.
What did she say?
She was like, oh, it's no problem. It was fun. I wanted to watch the movie. I had some friends here and we wanted to see the movie. And so, yeah, it was no problem.
Oh, that's fantastic. Because
I'm like, nobody has ever done. I've been a part of the Flashback weekend for, like, that was my 17th one.
Okay.
No celebrity would ever do that, has ever done anything like that. Would just voluntarily go up and work an audience and keep them entertained while they're trying to fix something that was a screw-up, you know, of the hotels and stuff.
Well, that says a lot about her.
It does, and she's awesome. She's very cool. But anyway, it was no rain that night, but a collapse of screen.
All right, so
Bruno Mars, you only saw about five songs, though.
Yeah, Bruno Mars, I mean, he was fantastic.
Yeah.
He was up there in a Scottie Pippen jersey. He was working the local crowd. But the National was fantastic, too, and they were equally as good on stage the night before at Metro. That was their big
after-show. Oh, that was their after-show, too. Okay, and then Saturday.
Saturday was my favorite day of the whole weekend because, to me, my two favorite performances of the entire weekend were back-to-back on the North main stage, which was LL Cool J and St. Vincent.
That's pretty cool.
Who were both just They were just terrific.
Yeah.
I wasn't necessarily expecting this show LL Cool J put on. He had 18 people on stage at one point.
You kidding?
It was a whole choreographed routine with dancers. It was like straight out of 1987.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it was.
And you got to interview him too before Lollapalooza.
Yeah, he's on this whole mission to kind of shine a light on the roots of rap and the history of hip hop. He's got a Sirius XM station dedicated to that. So he's been using select performances throughout the summer to kind of aid in that. He was at New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival, and this was the last date he had on the books, I think, the entire year.
Yeah.
But he was outstanding. A full hour set. He did every hit you could possibly want.
And he was on early, too.
He was on at like 4:45.
That's crazy.
It was crazy, but an immense crowd. He opened with Mama Said Knock You Out.
Opened with that?
Opened with it. Now, that's that's making a statement.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely.
Opened with it.
That's fantastic. Did they have any choreography to going back to Cali?
Yes.
Did they? Understand.
Oh, yeah. Fly yeah. Girls, dancers. It was the whole nine yards.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And then St. Vincent.
And she's
awesome.
That new album is so good. Yeah. And she's such a positive, you know, presence just generally.
Yeah, yeah.
In addition to the fact that she's a hell of a guitar player.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I never hear people talk about what a great guitar player she is.
That's true. No, I think she's great. I've always been a fan of hers. I think she's great. So that's cool. That was back to back on the same stage.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, with maybe a 45-minute break in between.
And you didn't have to move. You were there.
You were there.
There. All right. Very cool.
So that to me was the highlight of the whole weekend.
Okay.
And then Sunday was Jack White.
Ah.
So
how was he?
He was he's always interesting. He's become such an eccentric presence, and sometimes that rubs me the wrong way with him. He did some White Stripe stuff. Some of it he did the way you would expect to hear it. Fell in Love with a Girl. He did exactly as you would expect to hear it. Then there were a couple of other ones he was trying to put a unique spin on. This is not the name of it, but you'll know which one I mean. We're Going to Be Friends, the one Pearl Jam's covered recently.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He did that as like a country western version of it. It was just like, come on.
The thing that when we talked to our friend Jim Hankey, he is the host of Vinyl Emergency, which is a podcast. He's a vinyl collector.
Okay.
And apparently Jack White's is the dude when it comes to vinyl.
Oh, yeah,
like,
that's
like
right.
He does some amazing stuff with vinyl and is a real supporter of that. And
his label, the Third Man Records, was a huge presence at Lollapalooza. They had the truck where they were letting people record stuff, and they were doing all of that.
No, he's ahead of that game right there. He was way ahead of the game on that. So then the after parties, what was the best after party?
So I loved the National at Metro. I think very quietly over the course of the last 10 or 12 years, they've become one of the greatest live bands in America.
Mm-hmm.
And they did a full set. A lot of times these after shows, run a little bit over an hour, run an hour 15 or so. They went like over 2 hours, I think, that night at Metro. So, I mean, they went on at like 12:15. I think we walked out the door at like 2:30 or something.
Wow.
Ridiculous. Yeah, it was crazy.
That's a late night.
Yeah, it was a late night, but it was just, I mean, it was better than anything I saw on, as good as anything I saw on stage at Lollapalooza all weekend.
Very cool.
Yeah, they were dynamite.
All right, so that was Lollapalooza, and now we are. I want to take a break here, because when we come back, we have to talk about the outfield. Now, for people who think that that's a ridiculous statement,
I was going to say, do I need to apologize for this?
No, you don't. No, not at all.
Dan was very excited.
Yeah, of course. But Tony Lewis of the Outfield has a solo album. And the classic Outfield song "Your Love" has become, what has it become?
It's got an immense, like, startlingly immense number of streams. I think it's at like 127 million streams on Spotify, 117 million views of the video on YouTube. And to put that in perspective, it's got more streams than "Let It Be." It's got more streams than "Hey Jude," "Beast of Burden."
Wow.
Yeah, I looked up like a whole list. I was curious of what songs.
And you talked to Tony Lewis as well.
I did. He's got a new solo album.
All right. I have a little tidbit that I've shared with Esmeralda and Dan before about the Outfield, a specific Outfield video.
Oh, okay.
I'll tell you the little tidbit so that you can sound smart at parties.
Thank you.
Because, you know, the topic of the Outfield and their old videos from the 80s come up all the time.
That's a killer right there, yes.
Exactly. All right, well, we're going to take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk about some of the interviews that you've done.
Cool.
Some of the other stuff that you've seen. And did you go to Pearl Jam?
I did, both nights.
Oh, you did? I went Saturday.
Okay.
And, Monday was a better set list, I think.
There were parts of it I liked better and parts of it. Yeah, well, I went back and forth.
Okay, well, they, you know, like the thing is, like this, I looked at the set list for Monday after the rain delay.
Right.
Looked at the set list and I was like, oh man, because I went Saturday and I went on a whim. I just left my apartment and said I'm going, and I went. I got a ticket and I went in. I was like, but like the set list was better on Monday, but we got Dennis Rodman on Saturday.
And then we got Chris Chelios
on Monday. I know you guys got Chelios. That's what I'm saying.
So during the rain delay, by the way, on Monday, Rodman came walking by walking by us at Murphy's Bleachers with an entourage of like five people around him to keep people away.
Yeah.
Very
classy.
Well,
but that was the thing. That was the distinct difference. I was like, Monday might have been a better set list. We got Dennis Rodman handing out a ukulele on Saturday.
Was he wearing his jersey again like he was last time?
Just
in case people weren't sure.
Yeah, who he was.
Yeah.
All right. We have to take a break. All right. So we're going to break. Jim Ryan is here, and then we got more music to talk about right after this. Nick DiGilio Show, you're home for the outfield. Nick DiGilio here. We're back on WGN. Jim Ryan is with us. He writes about music for Forbes, the Daily Herald, the Chicago at Night blog on Chicago Now. You can follow him on Twitter at Radio Jim Ryan. We just got finished wrapping up Lollapalooza. And, of course, that's a classic, classic song called Your Love by The Outfield, who had a few big hits in the 80s, that being like their biggest.
The biggest, yeah.
And Tony Lewis of The Outfield has got a solo album.
He's back.
He's back. And I know that a lot of people have been saying, where has the lead singer of The Outfield been?
That's right.
Now, you know, the guy who was actually the leader of the band was the drummer.
Right.
And I'm blanking.
He was the guitar player, John Spinks.
John Spinks, right. John Spinks was the guy. He was the guy who basically wrote all the stuff.
Yeah,
that whole thing. That was John Spinks. But Tony Lewis was the voice. He was the front man. He played bass.
Correct.
Spinks played guitar, and then they were a trio.
There was a drummer,
And then there was a drummer, and they were a power trio, if you want to call them that. But Tony Lewis is back. Now, tell me about this interview that you did with the lead singer of Outfield.
Well, so it's a really interesting story behind how Your Love blew up, and then a sad story on why he's going solo. John Spinks passed away following a battle with cancer in 2014, so he was like, that's it. That's, you know, the single most defining element of all those Outfield songs is those harmonies, and those there are no more harmonies. So took him 3 years to even want to pick a guitar back up, but ultimately did put out a new solo album, which kind of is all about reentering the music industry, letting go of the past, all of that stuff. It's called Out of the Darkness. But we talked about the story behind Your Love, which is kind of interesting because it wasn't even envisioned as, nobody thought that was even going to be the main single. The album was released late in 1985.
Right.
Say It Isn't So was the first single.
Which is a jam.
But it did not become a nationwide hit.
Right.
So the band was touring, and they were taking a break from touring for Christmas of 1985. So the label was like, we'll throw this song out there as a stopgap just so there's a single at least out while they're off the road. And then it started kind of a slow burn, and by the time they went back on the road in the spring and summer of 86, it was just starting to pick up momentum.
Mm-hmm.
So it took a good 6 or 8 months to turn into this huge hit, but ultimately it did, and the album sold 3 million copies.
Yeah.
And he told me a story. He goes, it was so strange. He goes, because it took so long to build into this big single. He said when they found out they got the gold record for Play Deep, they were at a truck stop. And they started throwing car parts at each other. He goes, it was very bizarre. He goes, but it felt really good.
That's great.
So, yeah.
So they had, Play Deep was the first album.
Right.
Which was huge. And then they had Bangin', which was the next album.
Yeah.
And I love that album, too. But Bangin' had a song on it called Since You've Been Gone.
Okay.
A little theory I have. Every song called Since You've Been Gone is good.
That's to be confused with Kelly Clarkson.
No, it's good. Yeah. Every song, Since You've Been Gone, is good because you've got Since You've Been Gone by The Outfield. You got Since You've Been Gone by Kelly Clark. You got Since You've Been Gone by Rainbow.
Okay.
And then Since You're Gone by The Cars. And they're all good.
There you go.
They're all, so that if you have a title that is similar, you have a good song.
Just go
with it. My theory. Yeah.
That's not a bad theory.
So Since You've Been Gone by The Outfield, which is a jam.
From Bangin',
their second record.
Right.
The video, here's your little tidbit that you can throw out at parties. The video for Since You've Been Gone was shot on the location where Stanley Kubrick filmed the climax of Full Metal Jacket.
How did that happen? Was that intentional?
It was intentional on their part, yeah.
Wow.
Now, the movie was out the same year. That's the thing. So, like, people knew the location. You know, the burnt out, you've seen right. Full Metal Jacket, right?
Yeah.
The burnt out buildings when they go after the
right.
sniper. That's where they shot. It's not all of it, because they use different locations.
Sure.
But one of the main locations that they use, and it's a performance video.
I had no idea there was such depth to the outfield.
Yeah.
You don't necessarily get that element in Your Love.
No, you don't. But so that's pretty cool. Now, did he play a gig?
So he was here like a month or two ago. He was on a you'll enjoy this. He was on a tour called Retro Futura at the Arcata Theater in St. Charles.
Who else was on the bill?
Belinda Carlisle.
Oh man.
ABC.
Oh.
Modern English.
How was I not there?
The lead singer of Kajagoogoo.
Kamal?
Yes, that was him. I couldn't remember the name. There was another. The lead singer of Bow Wow Wow.
Come on now.
Mm-hmm.
Come on.
Yeah.
Oh,
and they each
man.
Did, I think, three songs. Not kidding, three songs.
Oh, man, that's fantastic. That is fantastic.
So Tony Lewis was on that tour.
Okay, well.
And it was his first tour in 14 years.
14 years, he's got a new record out.
Very excited about it.
And Your Love is still, you know, burning up the internet.
It's got this whole second life now. It's insane.
It does. Now, let me inform people who might not know, because you didn't know, and I told you this off the air. You have to look up the sketch from Saturday Night Live. Hutcherson? That's his name, right? Josh Hutcherson from the Hungry Shoot an Arrow and Eat Games, Hunger Games. He's in those
okay.
movies. He hosted SNL, and I want to say it was in 2016.
Wow,
or 2015.
I don't know, how did this not end up on my radar?
Well,
is what I want to know.
The sketch takes place in the 80s, and Vanessa Bayer and her 80s girlfriends, they've all got the poofed. And if I'm not mistaken, Haim is in the sketch.
Okay,
because
okay.
they were the musical guest.
Okay.
That night, and they were
wow.
in the sketch. This is
checking a lot of boxes
on
my list.
No, you have to see this. And I'm convinced that this sketch might be one of the reasons why this thing is streaming the way it is. So the idea is, it takes place in the 80s, and Vanessa Bayer goes up and says, I want to visit my friend Josie. And so she knocks on the front door, and they're all 80s out.
Okay.
Josh Hutcherson comes out. He's got a terrible 80s outfit on, mullet, the whole thing. And she's like, oh, you must be Josie's brother, Jeff. I'm here to see Josie. Is she home? And then he just goes, Josie's on a vacation. So he's lip syncing.
Okay.
And so he has no dialogue. Everything, she asks him a question, and everything is part of him lip syncing.
Oh my God.
From Your Love. And two guys come out and hit drums when they need to and stuff. It is unbelievably hilarious.
The second I get out of here, I'm searching this.
You know, you have to see it. And I'm not joking when I say that this thing blew up online. Like when this sketch came, everybody was posting it on social media and like, oh my God, this sketch was hilarious. And I really think it might have added to why people are downloading the song and why it's streaming.
You can't avoid it on FM radio. I swear I hear it every single day. It's insane.
It's a song that has a life all its own.
Yes.
But you got to see this sketch. Dan, you've seen the sketch, right?
I have. It's fantastic.
And it is unbelievably funny.
I can't wait to see this.
And we can't play it because it's a visual gag.
Right.
But it's out there. Dan, were you able to find it?
No, because it's, I think, exclusive to Hulu.
Oh, now it's just on Hulu.
Yeah,
well, you have Hulu.
I have Hulu,
so
I will find this.
Look it up, man, because it's really hilarious. Really hilarious.
2013.
Oh, God. Was it that long ago?
Wow.
Oh, boy. All right. So it was 5 years ago. So that's how long ago it was. Well, yeah, that makes sense because there hasn't been a Hunger Games movie in, 4 years? And the guy doesn't have a career anymore. So, yeah, that's right. That makes sense. All right. Well, listen, can you hang out for
a
couple of minutes?
Sure.
All right. So, because I want to talk about some of the other concerts that you saw and some of the interviews that you've done.
Cool.
And, there have been a lot of concerts.
There's been a ton lately. Yeah,
so we'll get into that. We'll talk about that. And are you going to Buffalo Town next Saturday?
I think I'm going to go to Buffalo Town.
Well, then I will see you there.
All right.
And by the way, thank you for offering me you offered me a ticket.
That
I couldn't go to.
Steve Earle.
To Steve Earle. That's right. Steve Earle. How was it?
I didn't go. They pulled my credential the next morning.
Oh.
So I'm glad you couldn't make it, actually.
Okay. Cause
But it sounded good. Steve Earle, Lucinda Williams, and Dwight Yoakam.
Yeah, no, that's not, you know, I mean, that's phenomenal. I couldn't go, and I've seen Steve Earle like 8,000 times.
I was going to say, I've never seen Dwight Yoakam.
I haven't either. I've seen Lucinda Williams as well.
I saw her open for Tom Petty.
That's it. Oh. That's good.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. Well, listen, we're going to take a break. We got the news coming up. Jim's going to hang out with us for a little bit longer, and we'll talk more more concerts and more interviews and all that cool stuff. And everybody needs to now is this interview that you did with Tony Lewis? What was that for Forbes?
That's at Forbes. Yeah, I got a bunch up in the last week at Forbes. New Order interview is up there. They're on tour right now. Tony Lewis from the Outfield. Dirks Bentley. A lot of great ones over there.
Okay, and that's all
at Forbes. Yeah,
Forbes, and you also write for the Daily Herald.
Yep,
and the Chicago at Night blog on Chicago Now.
Correct.
All right, cool. All right, we're going to take a break. Jim Ryan is with us. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. 2 for Tuesday is coming up. Yeah, man, 2 for Tuesday. One artist, two songs. So get your requests in right now, and we'll play them a little bit later on. And more with Jim Ryan right after we take this break for the news. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. Here at 303 Wacker. And we're here until 5 a.m. I'm your overnight dude, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich will have the opening bell at 5. The great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. It's Tuesday morning. That means 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, man, 2 for Tuesday. One artist, two songs. Get your requests in now. We'll play them later. 312-981-7200. We're going to be talking about ridiculous power ballads, 80s power ballads, and more coming up a little bit later on. We're talking music right now. Jim Ryan is with us. He joins us periodically. He writes about music for Forbes, the Daily Herald, and the Chicago at Night blog on Chicago Now. You can follow him on Twitter at Radio Jim Ryan, and we welcome Jim back. Welcome back, Jim.
Thank you, Nick.
So we just bumped back here with one of Dan's favorite bands of all time, which is Smashing Pumpkins, and they just played at the UC.
United Center, two nights.
Two nights.
Two nights.
I don't know. Why am I surprised that they could sell out the United Center for two nights?
Well, that would have been a surprising thing for most of the last 10 years, but you have James Iha and Jimmy Chamberlain back in the fold now. So yeah. You're pretty much, I think, this is the reunion. This is the closest we're going to get to it.
Yeah. Well, so did you go both nights?
I went the first night.
Okay.
Which was terrific.
Okay.
I think that's... And the first time I saw them was on tour for Siamese Dream when they did Lollapalooza in 94 in Tinley.
I was there.
And I think this current show sounded better than that did to me. To me, this is the best that band has ever sounded.
Yeah, I didn't pay much attention. They were not one of the bands that I was happy about on the bill that year.
Beastie Boys and George Clinton that year. There was a lot to like that year. But yeah. I've seen them, I think, like 10 or 15 times. I think this was the 15th time in some formation, so including Zwan and including solo shows.
Got it.
To me, this was the best they've sounded, and the set list was just insane.
And they played for, like, ever, right?
Hours and 15 minutes.
Yeah, I heard that the set, because, that's really crazy. So they must have covered most of their career then.
They were doing, to the first five albums. So this is Billy Corgan loves to rile people up and likes to, you know, if a fan base wants something specific from him, he wants to give them everything but that.
Yeah.
So this is really that first time he's making a concerted effort to do exactly what people want. So it was the first five albums. It was Gish, Siamese Dream, Melancholy, Adore, and Machina. And they got some of the deeper cuts. They did their soundtrack stuff. They did Drown Off singles.
Did they do the song from The Crow?
They did the song from Lost Highway. They did
Lost Lost Highway. Wait. And Batman.
They did that one as well.
They did the Batman
the
song.
The end is the beginning is the end.
Yeah. Which one is it? Batman and Robin?
Batman and Robin, I think, yeah. Which is a great soundtrack,
somebody,
by the way.
Somebody posted, one of my friends on Facebook says, they're doing the song from Batman. And they had posted it like live, and they had a little video of them. For some reason, this guy was very excited that they did the song from Batman.
There was something for everybody on that set list, because they rolled out the hits. You know, they toward the end of the night, they did, I think, Today and Bullet with Butterfly Wings back to back.
Jeez.
But, I mean, they did a 12-minute version of Porcelina of the Vast Oceans off Disc 2 from Melancholy.
Look at Dan's face.
Is Dan excited?
I am excited, but wow.
That set list was insane. I mean, it was...
That's great.
It was fantastic. Dan, I love the Smashing Pumpkins as well, so I was very excited.
There you go. Yeah. So, and the stage show itself, was it... Because, I mean, it's a big room to fill.
Yeah, it was... Well, you know what was funny about the whole thing was the master of ceremonies was basically James Iha. James Iha talked more than anyone else did that night.
Is that right?
He did the band intros. He did everything to the point where I looked at the guy next to me and I go, James Iha just spoke more on stage tonight than he did between 1987 and 2001. And like literally, like as if on cue, Billy Corgan walks up to the mic and goes, "It's just better when I don't talk." It was a very rare self-aware moment for him because he's right.
Wow.
Just shut up and play.
Wow.
And the people will come.
And I, if I'm not mistaken, the night before the first gig, they sang the seventh inning stretch at Wrigley.
They did, yeah. That was, which was the crazy rain game, or the crazy comeback, right?
The comeback, yeah.
And everybody left.
Yeah.
Because people were leaving early from United Center.
It was the Bodie game,
yes,
if I'm not mistaken. It was the David Bodie Grand Slam game, and they sang the seventh inning stretch.
And when people were getting up to leave at the end of the United Center show, Billy Corgan made a crack about, you're going to regret it, just like the people at the Cubs game last night.
Oh, is that right? That's pretty funny, yeah, man. That's pretty funny. All right. Well, what other, you've been busy going to concerts. What else have you seen?
I did both shows of Pearl Jam at Wrigley.
Went to the first one.
That was, I mean, they're so good live.
It's amazing.
They're another one. We talked about the National being one of the best live bands in the U.S. Pearl Jam's on that list too.
During the rain delay, you couldn't leave Wrigley, right?
I didn't go into Wrigley, thank God.
Oh, you didn't go in.
I was watching the radar and decided I'm going to wait this one out.
Mm-hmm.
And then the band started posting updates on Twitter about when they were going to be back. So I kind of based my arrival time off of that and walked in.
That's smart.
Right as they were starting, given the fly.
That's smart.
So it worked out real well. We stayed at Murphy's.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So I was telling you I went Saturday.
Okay.
On a whim, and thought it was amazing because they're always great. And then I was looking at Monday's set list and I was like, oh man, you guys got the better set list on Monday.
It's so funny to me though because like,
I'm not disappointed. I'm not disappointed.
Stuff I love on both.
No. Let me just clarify this. I'm not disappointed with the set list on Saturday, nor the show, because the show was great. There's no question about it. But there are a lot of songs on Monday's set list that I happen to really, really love. And they played like four in a row right at the top of the show that are, you know, like right at the top of the show on Monday. I looked at the set list, the first like four or five songs, I was like, are you kidding me?
There was a stretch in the middle of the Monday show where it kind of dragged to me because I loved the way it began and the way it ended. But as we were going from like Unthought Known and I'm a Patriot and stuff like that, it kind of dragged to me. But I mean, it's a polar opposite the way Saturday started compared to Monday, because Saturday they eased into it with Wash and Low Light and Elderly Woman.
Right.
Monday they came out guns a-blazing with Given to Fly, Why Go, Go, Last Exit, Mind Your Manners, and Do the Evolution.
It's insane.
Like, I think they probably played all of that in about 10 minutes. I mean, they were plowing through it.
Yeah, yeah, it's insane.
Because they still did 29 songs, despite the fact that it was a half hour shorter than Saturday.
Yeah. It's funny because I was saying this off the air that maybe Monday, personally, maybe was a better set list in my opinion.
Sure.
But on Saturday, we got Dennis Rodman.
In Monday, we got Chris Chelios.
You guys got Chris Chelios, you know, and I'd rather have Chris Chelios than Dennis Rodman.
Okay, I'm going to make what's going to be a very unpopular statement. I know I'm going to be in the minority when I say this. I'm growing a little tired of Eddie's Wrigley Field shtick.
Ah, mm-hmm.
He was trying to tell some story Monday night where he was connecting Wrigley Field to Stan Mikita, and I was like, just stop.
Yeah.
We get it.
Yeah.
We're aware.
Yeah. You've got a jersey on.
Cool. You're wearing a batting helmet. Yeah, I got it.
You got it. So, anyway, Pearl Jam, I went to one of the shows, and it was great. You went to both.
Yeah, they were terrific.
Anything else?
I think that's it lately, but I'm looking forward to Buffalo Tom next week.
Yes, Buffalo Tom is playing a week from Saturday at the Metro, which is, that's the first place I ever saw Buffalo Tom was at the Metro.
Okay.
In 1992. That was
wow.
First time I ever saw him was at the Metro in 1992.
I've never seen him.
They're unbelievable.
I
don't even know how many times I've seen him.
I've seen Bill Janovitz at Martyrs.
Right, for the lost Lennon and McCartney songs with Graham Parker and Kate Pearson.
Kate Pearson, yeah.
That was a great show. That was a great show.
It was awesome, yeah.
But no, if you've never seen Buffalo Tom, every single show, every single time, they're amazing.
Yeah, that's... I gotta go.
this being the 25th anniversary of Let Me Come Over, which is their third album, which is the album that really sort of cemented them as being at least you know like underground champions.
Right.
And they're going to play the whole thing. I believe they're going to play it front to back.
Okay.
If I'm not mistaken, because it's the 25th anniversary tour for Let Me Come Over. So I think they're going to start with Staples and go all the way through the
that would make sense.
And then probably just do, you know, selected cuts from the past.
I have to move either this weekend or next weekend.
Because I was kind of like,
I don't want to do it on a holiday weekend, but now I feel like I should plan it around Buffalo Tom and Metro.
Yeah. So
Maybe it will be this weekend.
Yeah. So this weekend, it's a holiday weekend, but you're right. But Buffalo Tom, and they play a while, man. They play a good long set.
So I shouldn't do it Sunday the 9th, is what you're telling me.
I wouldn't.
And I should avoid that.
You know, I don't know who's. I don't know if there's an opening act. I'm sure there is.
Okay.
I don't know who the opening act is, but the showtime is 7:30.
Okay.
So I would guess Buffalo Tom would get on between 9 and 9:30.
How perfect is Metro for that, though? Are you not a fan?
No, I am. I mean, I'm just wondering if, like, they're going to, because, you know, they post the thing up on the wall where you can see, like, what time everybody is supposed to come on.
Right.
And they usually keep it pretty close. But I just don't know. I don't know if there's going to be one opening act or two. I would imagine there's only going to be one. Is there a late show in there? Because normally, sometimes they have a late show at the Metro. So that if you get a 7:30 curtain, you know, you get an opening act, plays, I don't know, 40 minutes, and then the band comes on at, like, 8:45.
I am not seeing an opener listed here.
Yeah, there's no opener listed on the website either.
Yeah.
So, but they usually do have an opener. I'm trying to remember.
It would stand to reason that there's an opener, but, boy, they're not listing one on the website, that's for sure.
Okay. All right. Well, it doesn't matter because Buffalo Tom is going to be there.
Yes.
And they haven't been here since, I want to say, 2012.
The worst thing that would be to assume that there's an opener and then show up, you know, as they're starting the encore.
Yeah. No, that's not going to happen.
That would be bad.
No, that's not going to happen. That's not going to happen. I don't know what time I'm going to get there, but I believe I'm not to name drop or anything, but I'm probably going to be hanging out with Bill. So
look at you.
I have a pretty good connection to see Buffalo Tom.
That's pretty good.
His name is Bill Janovitz. So, all right, very cool. Now, you did an interview with New Order. Who of New Order did you interview?
It was Stephen Morris, so drummer of Joy Division and New Order.
Yeah.
And that's a really interesting thing to me, because I remember hearing when I first got into New Order that you didn't want to go see them live because it could be a train wreck, because it was so hard for them to recreate a lot of that stuff live.
Yeah.
So what we talked about was the fact that the technology's caught up now, because, I mean, he talked about, he's like, we recorded this stuff on drum machines that were never intended to be taken out of the studio.
Right.
And we're trying to take them on tour, and it's, you know, it was a train wreck. But now the technology's caught up, and it's improved the live show, so much so to the point that their last studio album, which was the first without Peter Hook, but it was way more, or they got kind of back to the electronic stuff after a couple of albums in a row that were more guitar-based.
Did they, you talked about revisiting Joy Division?
Yeah, they did. They just put out a live album last year, recorded over two nights at Brixton Academy, and they did a bunch of Joy Division.
Is that right?
So I asked him what it was like 40 years later because it's a different band, New Order.
Oh, yeah, completely.
You know, especially now, let alone 1980 New Order.
Right.
It's right. Just such a vastly different band. There's no Peter Hook. So we talked about what it was like to kind of revisit that stuff. And he said the key with some of it is just not to change too much. He's like, we want to do it in the spirit of Joy Division, but we're not that band anymore. He goes, but at the same time, if you have a song like Level Tear Us Apart, what do you do to that song, right?
Right.
I mean, you just play it as is.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was really interesting.
Yeah, well, that's cool. And then Dierks Bentley.
He's created and curated a festival, because I think that's now, apparently that's every artist's pet project.
Is to do a festival.
Yeah,
yeah.
But so he has one in, it's this weekend, it's Labor Day weekend in Buena Vista, Colorado, so set within the Rocky Mountains. A camping and music extravaganza, Nick. 3 days of country music. Camping on site in the Rockies. This sounds like your cup of tea.
Yeah.
Are you going?
Yeah, sign me up.
I could probably get you a media pass.
Yeah, no. Yeah, sure. I'll go.
Dan?
I have to drive him, so yeah.
When are you guys leaving?
To
get to the Rockies.
It's my dad's birthday this weekend.
Oh, okay.
And Dan's sister-in-law is getting married this weekend. So,
all right. Well,
so
then
we're booked.
So
I'm sorry.
Dierks Bentley's
we can't
out.
Make it. We can't sit
sorry,
out.
Dirk.
We can't. Sorry, Dirk. Yes, right. We're not going to be sleeping in a tent this weekend. And so
I will tell you what the one interesting thing was about that, though. I asked him what his festival pet peeve is. I'm like, obviously, you've probably played one or two of these over the years. You know, what has stuck out to you that you made a conscious effort to avoid when it came to creating
putting
your
this
own?
Thing together? Yeah.
And he said the white chairs, and I knew exactly what he meant immediately. You know,
I know.
It's the VIP section in front of the stage where at 4 p.m. when the openers are going on, there's, you know, 50 yards of empty seats and then 10,000 people standing behind them.
Yeah.
And these bands are forced to play to empty seats.
Right.
So I talked to him and Brian O'Connell, who's the head of country touring for Live Nation, and they both talked about how there's a way to do VIP. People want to pay for it. They want that. It's fine to have that.
Yeah.
But there's a way to do that without.
So he's going to do it without the white chairs?
Without the white chairs.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that was kind of their whole thing.
That always depresses me when I go to, when I've gone to concerts in the past where there are like four or five bands and like a band I really love, nobody is there. And I'm going to say Buffalo Tom now because.
I know exactly where you're going.
Buffalo
here.
Tom.
Veruca Salt.
PJ Harvey.
Yes.
And Live. The headliners were Live.
Uh-huh.
And Buffalo Tom was first. And the sun was out, and it was me and like seven other people. And they still kicked ass. They came out, and I talked to Bill about that too, where he's like, it was like that every single date we went.
I talked to Ed Kowalczyk last year because they were at Lollapalooza.
Right.
And he's told me a story. He claimed that they told him at that point that they had set an attendance record at the World Music Theater in Tinley Park at that time, that Live sold out that show, and that was the... That was, I don't know how,
well,
I would imagine you're capping the attendance every, theoretically, you know, a certain amount, but he claimed they told him that was...
Well, by the time they came out, the place was packed.
And they were huge.
I mean, it was the Throwing Copper was just
like
through the roof at that point.
Six singles or something off that album? Yeah, it was incredible.
The place was completely packed by the time they got there.
Right.
I'm just saying, my favorite band on the bill, there were like 12 people.
Yeah.
I was trying to get people's attention, you know, near the beer stands going, hey, come on in here. There's a really great band on right now. So, anyway. Oh, man.
My favorite story like that was it was an all-day festival in Tinley Park, and Hole was on the bill. This would have been 2000, I think. So Celebrity Skin had just come out?
No, Celebrity Skin was 98.
Okay. This was the summer of 99.
That would sound, yeah, okay. Yeah, because Celebrity Skin's one of my favorite. I love that album. Speaking of Billy Corgan.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I know. Courtney has two major albums in. Kurt wrote the first one and Billy wrote the second one. But, It was an all-day FM radio festival, and elsewhere on the bill it was Blondie, The Offspring, Silverchair, Local H, the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Yeah, this was definitely 98 or 99, my friend. Yeah.
But Hole was on the sun was still out, and it was exactly what you described in the pavilion. The lawn's packed, the pavilion's empty, and Courtney is not having it.
Oh, man.
They played like two songs, and she loses her mind. She's like, I'm not continuing the set until everybody out there fills in these seats. And there's this stampede from the lawn to the pavilion. And like, I was standing at the front of the lawn looking. So the ushers at the back of the pavilion are looking straight at us, and they had the classic deer in the headlights look on their faces as the lawn is emptying out straight at them.
You know, Esmeralda used to work there.
I'm sorry.
But I think it was later than that. That would have been like 99. I don't think she was working there in 99. Or maybe, I don't know. But if, you know, I'm sure, because she had that, she was a usher at the whatever the hell it was called.
The World
or the Tweeter or whatever the hell it was. That's pretty funny, though. Of course Courtney Love's going to do that. Of course she's going to do that.
That was the most surreal show I've ever seen in my life, because elsewhere in that set, Courtney, and it was all on the jumbo screen to the side of the stage, Courtney dove off the stage and started pummeling a guy in the front row with a Cobain t-shirt on, who apparently yelled at her, because she told the whole story when she got back on stage, said the guy yelled at her, "You killed Kurt." And the band's playing, she dives off the stage and starts beating this guy in the front row.
You know what? I make no apologies. I love Courtney Love.
I get a kick out of her.
I love her.
She entertains me.
Oh, my God. I just think she's the best.
She finished her set, by the way. She came out for the encore topless. wearing a giant pair of angel wings because the crowd had been chanting at her to show something. So she came out for the encore and complied.
God bless her.
Yeah.
That's all I got to say.
She's a piece of work.
She's something, man. Mm-hmm. I love her. All right, Jim. Always, we got to end on that note. A topless Courtney Love with angels' wings. That's the image that's in my head right now.
And beating up her fans.
Beating up her fans. God bless Courtney Love. Mm-hmm. All right, Jim. Always a pleasure, man.
Thank you.
You can read him in Forbes, the Daily Herald, Chicago Night Blog, Chicago Now. Follow him on Twitter at Radio Jim Ryan, and I will probably see you in a couple of weeks at Pearl Jam at Buffalo Time.
I hope so.
Okay, man. Thanks again.
Thank you.
All right, there you go. We'll take a quick break.